Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar.com, chase your destiny. Premium Plus Sports, the official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series. Swim Run USA, epic races in epic places. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, last year we sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out at Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Speaking of endurance, there is only one woman in the 40-year history of the Ironman Triathlon World Championship who, in a hand cycle and a racing chair, finished the toughest day in sport. And her name is Minda Dentler, and she joins us now. Minda, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, if people have not watched you on your TED Talk, it was exceptional. You did a phenomenal, phenomenal job. Tell me a little bit of how that came about.
Yeah, sure. So last year, I spoke at the Aspen Ideas Festival, and a few people saw me speak there and then invited me to speak at TED Women a few months later. So that's how I was able to get on the TED stage. It was an absolute honor to be able to share my story.
Well, and you brought the house down. And the story is one of those of perseverance. It's one of those of overcoming. Talk a little bit about, I mean, what do you even remember of your early years in India?
I actually don't have any memories of being in India. I guess a little bit about me is,
yeah.
I was born in 1978, and my mother didn't have me vaccinated for polio. She didn't have access to it, and I contracted polio, which left me paralyzed from the hips down. And my mom at the time, I've been told that she was a single mother. She couldn't take care of me, so she left me at an orphanage. And that three and a half years I was in the orphanage, I don't have any memories of it. I was adopted, fortunately, by an American family, and I moved to Spokane, Washington, when I was three and a half. And from there, it was just about being in hospitals. I think as an early child, I spent a number of months in hospitals recovering or receiving surgeries to be able to eventually, straighten my body out so I could walk with leg braces and crutches.
How many operations do you think you underwent?
Four big ones. And then I had, ancillary, appointments to fix certain things.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Wow. And it's funny because I remember talking to Scout Bassett, who was adopted from an orphanage in China, and she said, Bob, I went to a little town in Michigan. I wasn't just the only amputee there. I was the only Asian that these people had ever seen before. Coming from India, and where were you up in Washington?
Yes. So I can really relate to Scout's experience or comment there. My parents, they had two children of their own,
uh-huh.
And then they also adopted my brother from Korea and then myself from India. And I felt like we were the diversity of our high school and, elementary and junior high. So I can understand and relate to feeling very different, not only because of the color of my skin, country I came from, but also having a disability.
The other thing that's interesting is when you have a disability, especially back in those days, sport wasn't even an option, right? It wasn't like people said, okay, you can come play with the other kids.
No, I think it's really funny because my dad is really into sports, and I swear, every weekend watching sports on TV with him. We didn't have cable, so it was like Wide World of Sports and, football, baseball, you name it. And my siblings are really athletic, but I never thought that I could be an athlete too. And there's a famous running race in Spokane. It's called Bloomsday.
Yep.
It's one of the largest running races
in the world.
Is it in the world? Yeah.
Yeah, and Don Cordong, a famous runner, was one who I think started it. Yeah, that race has been going on forever.
I used to volunteer for that race for many years, and I would hand out water, and I even watched the wheelchair races.
Yep.
But I never put two and two together that that could be me. I could also race as well.
What's fascinating about that, Bloomsday, there was Bloomsday, and there was Runner's Den, and there was all these great races that also incorporated wheelchair racing. This is before hand cycle. So, you had folks who were actually making a living traveling the circuit racing wheelchairs, which was very novel back then and has become, it's a big sport. Winning Boston Marathon prize purse is huge. So it's become, but you, here you are and you've got leg braces on. And now did you spend time in a wheelchair as well, or were you on your braces all the time?
I was primarily on my braces. I actually was in a terrible car accident when I was 15. So I spent a year in a wheelchair in high school. And so that was like my first experience being in a wheelchair full time. I guess fast forward after moving to New York City, one of my mentors, his name is Joe Dowling. He's also a polio survivor.
Uh-huh.
And he's also a wheelchair racer. He was actually somebody that I had watched and recognized, in Bloomsday, because he had raced there for many years. And it was just really fortunate that I was able to meet him and become friends with him. But he really encouraged me, as a polio survivor himself, to really take it easy on my arms because, over time, our bodies, experience fatigue, and I won't be able to race, forever.
Right.
But, he says, you should really consider saving your arms. And so I do spend half my time in a wheelchair and using crutches. And I think it's kind of funny because here I am abusing my arms, training for triathlons.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what's fascinating about that is one of the top wheelchair racers, a guy named Jim Knob, who was an Olympic trials pole vaulter, and I started covering him in the mid-'80s. And he was the one who told me early on, he says, Bob, it's not like somebody can, I can have a knee resurface or knee replacement or hip resurface or hip replacement. When your shoulders go, they're gone. There's not a lot they can do. And he says, think about it. Everything I do, and he wasn't doing triathlon. He was just doing marathon racing. He says, I'm transferring from the car to the chair. Everything is shoulders. And, we have a finite, we got to protect them. And so spending time in the chair, you're still using your arms.
Yes.
That's really difficult.
But it's actually a different movement. Using crutches, to me, it's like, it's using different muscle groups,
right?
And I think that it's more difficult to crutch around on my upper body versus pushing a wheelchair every day.
Well, what's interesting too is we just a couple weeks ago with one of our grant distributions, it's very similar to this. This girl was born; her legs were an issue in Russia. She was born in Russia. Her name's Lyra, and her parents were told, if you ever want to get medical treatment for her, you need to put her in an orphanage, because obviously they couldn't afford it. And she got adopted by a family from Arizona. And now that she turned 14, her doctor said, with those legs, you're getting bigger. Your shoulders are getting under a lot of stress because you're pulling these legs around. You might want to think about amputation. And that's what they did.
Oh,
they amputated her legs on June 29th, and she fell in love with sled hockey, and we just surprised her on air, the NHL Network, with all her sled hockey equipment. But,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but at the age of 14, the doctor was saying, you know what, it's not like your legs are getting better. As you get older, you're adding more weight, and you're going to be putting more stress on your shoulders. You might want to think about this. And she was like, I am all in on that. So it's been, I thought that was pretty interesting. And she found a sport that she loves, and hopefully she'll be able to go to the Paralympics. So for you, when did you first get introduced to sport and get the feeling that, you know what, I've spent all these years, I can be an athlete?
Yeah. Well, for me, it actually happened as a young adult. I was in business school at age, 26. And one of my friends had trained for the New York City Marathon. And she was like, hey, there's this sports, for wheelchair athletes, like autonomous hand cycling, you should really consider, you know, like learning about it. And so she introduced me to an organization in New York City called Achilles. I learned how to hand cycle. And then fast forward a few years later, I was watching one of my friends who's a wheelchair athlete complete the New York City Triathlon. And I thought that was the coolest thing. And I was so excited after he had finished that I immediately, you know, whenever the sign-up came around, I signed up for the New York City Marathon the following year. And I also signed up for swimming lessons because I didn't know how to swim. And then and I also signed up for a CAS grant, and I got my first racing wheelchair. So within the span of, like, I don't know, 5 months, not only did I learn how to swim, but I learned how to push a racing wheelchair. And I got across that New York City Triathlon finish line, and it took me, it's really embarrassing my time, but I was just so excited to have finished it, and I think it really ignited that spark in me to want to continue in triathlon.
Yeah, and then you start meeting the community, right? You start meeting other people who are doing the sport in a hand cycle and a racing chair, and you know, there's some mentoring that happens there. Who helped you out in terms of the whole triathlon side?
I went to a camp for athletes with disabilities, and I met Jason Fowler.
Oh yeah, Jason, one of the best Ironman champion.
Yes. I remember hearing his story about doing the Ironman, and I was thinking, who the heck does something like that? But he did it, and he was in front of me telling me his whole story, and I just was so inspired. We actually just became friends over, you know, a few years. He became my mentor, helping me figure out, you know, some of the logistics about racing. And then I joined a tri club in New York City. And I was just, it's kind of funny when you're around people who are like-minded, they're, you know, taking up their distances. It almost becomes like, oh, I should do that too. So then I signed up for half Ironman, and then the following year after completing the half Ironman, I'm going to do the Ironman. And I think having people like Jason in my corner, and other athletes like Zabednik and Czech Republic, they were really instrumental in helping me figure this puzzle out on, you know, being a wheelchair athlete and trying to do this Kona thing.
Well, and when you look at the triathlon, it's one thing, you get in your racing chair to do a marathon and you do the marathon and that's it. But when you're talking about triathlon and you're swimming, and then, you know, you usually need somebody to get you into the water.
Yep.
Then your handlers to get you out of the water and get you into the hand cycle. And then again, so the transitions are, I remember Carlos Maleda, a 5-time Ironman world champion, telling me, he says, Bob, for when I'm doing the Ironman, I'm the same as everybody else. It's just me and the cutoff times and me against the course. And it's Minda against the course on race day. Yeah, you need a little help in transitions. But besides that, he felt it was a freeing experience because there was no difference. The disability disappeared. It was him against the course, him against David Bailey. It was racing at its purest. Did you find that as well?
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I love sports so much, and especially triathlon, because I'm competing side by side with able-bodied athletes facing the same challenges of distance and time. And when I'm out there, like, I have to do the same mileage, and I have to make the same time cutoffs, and it's such a great feeling to be able to do it on my own. But as we all know, as triathletes, like, you have a huge team behind you in order to even get you to that, you know, to race day. So I think, you know, I wouldn't be where I was without acknowledging my husband, for sure, because he was the one that believed in me before I believed in myself to be able to take on, you know, this distance and all the sacrifices, you know, he's made to help me. And then all of the people who I was able to enroll in to help me in achieving that dream.
So 2012, you come over to Kona for the first time. And there's a lot of races in the world. And every race has its own little personality. But when you get off the plane in Kona, and you feel that the steam coming off the lava field and the wind, and it's just like this, you put your face in a hairdryer, And there's just something about that place, plus the history and all the rest of it. What, when you first got there, now, had that been your, going to that race, was that the first time you'd been to Kona?
Yes, it was. I had done the Ironman in Louisville like 6 weeks prior.
Right.
So I understood, you know, what it took, you know, to get an Ironman done, but Kona is like a different animal altogether.
Totally. And so in that first year, when you look back on it now, you got what, to around the turnaround on the bike?
Yep, I got to Javi.
You got to Javi. So you swam 2.4. If somebody had told you a few years before, you're going to go to Hawaii, you're going to swim 2.4 miles in the ocean, and you're going to ride 56 miles on one of the toughest bike courses on the planet, you would have just told them, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I had just learned how to swim, like, I don't know, 34, like 4 years prior. So
yeah.
It's definitely an amazing trajectory. But I mean, when you meet other triathletes, like, everyone has a great, you know, personal story. So yeah, you're right. It was kind of unbelievable. But when you're in the moment, like it's just amazing.
Yeah, and when you get to, you realize I'm not going to make the cutoff. And was it a physical issues, mechanical issues? What happened that day?
Oh, I was just too slow. And the med vehicle were like, okay, you got to get off the course.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's pretty clear cut. Boom. It's not like, oh, I just missed the cutoff time. It's like, okay, yeah, you're not going to make it.
No. And they were trailing me. Yep.
And you had just made all the cutoff times in Louisville a month earlier.
Yes.
So,
It's just different. It's just different. Each Ironman course is different. And Kona has this, you know, heat, humidity, and crosswinds. I think it's just legendary, that bike course.
It really is. So what did you learn from that year that brought you back? Because I saw this say Sarah Reinertsen was the first single above-knee amputee to finish Ironman, but the first time she came, missed the bike cutoff time by 15 minutes, my favorite line, she said, Ironman became the most high-maintenance boyfriend I ever had. Is that the best line ever for the next year, right? Because she slept and ate, and everything she thought about was Ironman, finishing.
Yes.
For you, I'm guessing it was probably something similar.
Yeah, of course. I think for me, not finishing in 2012, feeling like I was fit and ready and knowing, you know, what it took to get an Ironman done, I thought I was prepared. So for me, I kind of took it hard that I wasn't able to finish it, and it just became my personal mission to figure out this puzzle and to get it done the following year. And I mean, I think my formula isn't that different from other people, but it was just about doing the work, you know, spending those hours, you know, early in the morning and the weekends. And I think one of the biggest thing or takeaway for me was being able to create a great team. Not only did I have my husband, but, you know, I had like a coach. I had a swimming coach because I knew I had to fix my swim. I had a physical therapist. I had people who rode with me on the highway because, you know.
It's scary.
In a bicycle, I'm so low to the ground.
Right.
And, it's very dangerous to ride by myself. So
yep.
I had people who, you know, gave their time to ride with me on weekends. And then having family to, like, I did open water swimming at a family's lake place. Like, I just had a number of people that were invested in me and helping me, you know, just get prepared for that big day. And then when it really came down to race day, it's just about believing in yourself. I think sometimes when you think about, or maybe I could just talk about myself, is, you know, you look at history and you think, how come no female athlete or wheelchair athlete had completed the race? And that's kind of daunting. But, like, the first thing you have to do is believe in yourself. And that was a big mind shift that I had, because if you have any type of doubt, it's going to rear its head, you know, like, you know, those long hours on the Ironman bike course especially. And then really on race day, it's just having that unrelenting determination to just, you know, see it through, and, you know, whatever obstacles at the course or if something happens to you, you just got to be able to be flexible and address them in the moment and, you know, stay calm under pressure, and then just knowing that it's going to hurt a lot, and you just have to remember that it's like it's not forever. And I think just having that, and I was really focused on, you know, moment by moment. Like, I didn't think, like, when I, you know, started the swim, I was not thinking about that bike course. I was looking at, okay, can I, like, stroke by stroke, can I get to the next buoy? And, I mean, it was the same thing on the bike. I mean, it almost got to the point where, like, can I get to the next bush, you know? Because it's
right.
Just so hard in some of, you know, in some areas of the bike course. And then, obviously, on the run, it's like, you know, can I get to the next mile marker? So I think this, like, that's what worked for me on that day. But, you know, I'm obviously really proud of having completed it. And but I just really want to recognize how many people helped me to even get to the start line and to be there for me throughout the process. My family and friends are the best support for it, too. Like, they were there, you know, both times, right? They came in 2012 and 2013 to be there for me. So it was really neat to share this experience with them.
The thing people don't understand, and it's funny, when we first got wheelchairs into the Ironman back in 1994, and a guy named Dr. John Franks was the first guy to come over, he missed the bike cutoff time. And then, you know, you have to finish that bike, the same cutoff times, level playing field as the able-bodied athletes. And 95, 96, John McLean missed from Australia, missed the bike cutoff times. He finally made it 97. And then Carlos Moledo won 10:55, which would have won the first two Ironman races overall and sort of changed everything, right? And changed. But from the woman's side, getting done by 5:30 in the afternoon, getting that bike ride done. And I think all of us knew when somebody finished the bike, they're going to finish the run because you got your racing chair. But then you got to make that bike cut off them. And actually, there was a point when a woman named Trisha Downing came. And she missed a bike cutoff time a couple of times, I think. She started talking about, well, I think we should probably eliminate that bike cutoff time for hand cycle athletes. And our feeling was, no, it needs to be a level playing field. And it can be done. And so when you came in and saw, because it was nip and tuck. It's not like you had this thing in the bag. Were there points during that hand cycle, especially in those last 5-6 miles, where you were going, man, I gotta keep pushing. I don't know if I can make this.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I struggled at various points on that bike, like had stomach issues. I mean, I had to stop eating and I was worried about my nutrition. Then I had some low points and then I knew, like, oh my gosh, some big hills are coming up.
Yes.
It was really, I mean, like, I just had to, like, there was a point of stress, but then I had to keep telling myself, look, like, they're going to have to peel you off that bike course. You know what I mean? Like, you are going to put everything out there on that course. And I made that bike cut off by 3 minutes.
3 minutes. But when you made it, you must have been like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing. Or could you celebrate it at that point because you still got to do a marathon?
Actually, I had overheated. And so I ended up spending some considerable amount of time in T2 trying to get it together because I just couldn't keep anything down and then I had a whole marathon I had to do after that.
Right.
So I mean, I had really extended myself to make sure I make that cut off. But I mean, once I got on the run, you know, my stomach was able to settle down and I was able to you know, keep on moving.
It's funny. I remember this gal who won the 81 Ironman. She is Linda Sweeney. We actually just interviewed her recently, and she was saying, I said, did you spend much time on the course before? And she says, no, I saw there was a net elevation gain of zero, so I thought it was flat. And I'm like, yeah, no.
What?
Yeah. She never went on the bike course or the run course. She thought it was all flat. As you know, that pay and save hill on a racing chair, I'm sure you still have nightmares about that thing. I mean, that thing seems like you're climbing Mount Everest.
That's what I say too, because especially I think it's at mile 10 or 11.
Yes, it's in a really tough place on the course.
Yeah, and fortunately I had my friends and family there, and they literally like were walking next to me, yelling at me to get me up that hill. And I think just like being able to focus on them and not my pain was really helpful.
And it's funny too, because the mind. When you're out there in the lava fields, and both in the run and especially in the hand cycle, And I remember David Bailey, who ended up winning the thing in 2000, saying, you know, Bob, you're out there, and I'm looking at my speedometer, and I'm going one, right? I'm going 1 mile an hour. And mentally, you start going, I'm going one. I'm going to be out here for 112 hours. And you know, your mind just starts playing these. You got to calm it. And like you said, it's almost like you're going to the buffet and you're eating one little piece at a time. You can't think about the whole thing. It just seems too overwhelming.
Yep.
So when you got to the top of PanSave, it's a half a mile hill. But seriously, if you're in a chair, it could take 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Oh, it took me like. I'm sure it took me a good 20 minutes.
20
was
minutes,
like the
yeah.
longest half mile of my life, for sure.
Wow. But then there's a payback. When you got to the top of it, I bet there was a big smile.
But then, you know, you're like 15, 16 miles.
Yeah, right. You do. You do. Yeah.
And you have the energy lab, too. So, yeah.
That's right. You have the long grind out of the energy lab before you get to that last 10K on the Queen Highway.
Yes.
And also, it's at that point, I'm guessing it's dark out.
Yeah, it is really dark, and I had some lights on my racer, and I think it was really funny because, you know, you're racing side by side with runners, and we're all kind of like, you know, digging in deep together, and people were really supportive out there because I was hurting really bad.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about that, because it's you're racing in a hand cycle and a racing chair. People are using bicycles and running. It's different, but it's the same. The camaraderie, because you're all afterwards and even during the race, you can say, God, my stomach is really killing me. Yeah, you should try this. Or after the race to say, man, the wind out by Javi was just brutal. It doesn't really matter what, if you're in a hand cycle racing chair, it's an equal opportunity abuser, right? It doesn't really, the course doesn't really care. It's going after you. Do you find that camaraderie from this sport is just different than other friendships you've developed over time?
Oh, yeah, of course, most definitely. I think it's kind of funny, like triathletes are the first people to tell you, like the details of each, you know, experience and but they get it and you get each other and I really appreciate just like the mindset that people have and like we are all busy people and we're all setting out this personal goal for ourselves and working hard to achieve it. So it's just having that, you know, that camaraderie and having that same vision, I guess.
So here you are with polio, with paralyzed legs, never thought of yourself as an athlete, and you are the only woman in history to finish the Ironman World Championship in a hand cycle and a racing chair. Does that ever get old? Does that ever, because you never thought of yourself as an athlete, and now you're far more than an athlete. You're a pioneer. You're a groundbreaker, and you've proven that something could be done when a lot of people thought it couldn't be done?
You know what? In the year that I had gotten it done, like, I wasn't really thinking about what would happen if I did. So everything that came from that experience has been was mind-blowing. Like, I didn't understand how it would affect others by sharing my story. And frankly, I was a bit of an introvert before having, you know, completed this race. And I just want to tell a story. At the awards ceremony in Kona, I was able to meet one of my heroes, Chrissy Wellington.
Yes.
And she pulled me aside and she said something that really stood out for me and actually kind of changed my life in a way. She said, Minda, you now have a platform. Go and use it. And here I had just so-called won this race and I wasn't really thinking about what's next. And here she's challenging me to figure out, you know, what that is. Like, how could I impact, you know, not just the triathlon community, but the world. And I spent the next year or so trying to figure out, like, what is she talking about? What is that about? And organically, people had asked me to share my experience, and I started sharing my story, and then I was invited to speak on World Polio Day, because that was the first time I had talked about being a polio survivor. And so it's almost like the mission chose me, right?
Yes.
Here I am now. My bigger Ironman or goal that I've set for myself is to really advocate for the end of polio, which is the disease that has impacted me. And so now I serve as an advocate. I serve as an ambassador for a few organizations that are really involved in helping to end polio.
See, for people who live in the United States, I think a lot of us feel, okay, polio hasn't that been eradicated? Hasn't it really dropped off the face of the earth? Is polio still a major issue?
Well, they say that if there's a case of polio anywhere,
it's a major issue.
It's still a threat to the world, and especially in a world where a disease could be a plane right away. I mean, we talk about how we don't have measles in this country, but now, like, you see all of these measles cases that is really surprising in the U.S. This is just one example.
Sure.
But I think. The greater issue is that, there was only a few pockets of cases of polio in, two endemic countries. And so it's about making sure that people worldwide continue to have access to the vaccine, because that's what's going to make us, or I guess the world, to eliminate polio. And so ensuring that we keep those vaccination rates up. But in general, I think as a mom,
yes,
it really hit home for me because, I have a 3-year-old daughter now.
Right.
And I had gotten her, obviously I decided to get her vaccinated, but then it just became really real to me in the moment when she was vaccinated against polio, because I began to realize all the things that she would be able to do that I wasn't able to do. And then it just makes, I think, me more of a stronger advocate for childhood vaccinations and just encouraging parents to do their job in ensuring not only a polio-free world, but for a world free of preventable diseases.
So you finished the Ironman, and now being a mom, talk a little bit about being a mom and how cool it is. Just, you're an athlete, you're a mom, you're also part of Women for Tri, you're mm-hmm. you're an ambassador for that program. You're doing some great stuff, and just as an aside, I remember when Chrissy won the Ironman in 2007 for the first time, and she said, "Bob, this gives me a platform. This gives me a platform to encourage women and girls to get into sport." She knew. Mm-hmm. The light bulb went on mm-hmm. for her, because she had been involved with she had worked in Nepal. She had a lot of life experiences leading into that race. And mm-hmm. she didn't know what to expect when she won the Ironman. And nobody knew who the heck she was. She had won Ironman Korea a few weeks before, but she certainly wasn't one of the favorites. And then when she won, she realized that this little sport could help not just her, but it could help her reach other people and share that vision that sport is great and it can mm-hmm. give you self-confidence and change everything. So, for you, with all the life experiences you're having now, part of Women for Tri, doing a TED Talk, and being a mom, talk a little bit about how your life is changed nowadays.
Oh, it's definitely more full.
You think?
Look, I always wanted to become a mother, and it's been really neat to be Maya's mom and to be a parent and to see her go through these milestones and then also just I think one thing we're prioritizing fitness and in our family and I think I'm a good role model for her because she sees me training at home. She even knows how to ride my bike. And a few weeks ago, I did Dubai, Ironman 70.3 in Dubai, and we signed Maya up for her first running race. And she just really enjoyed the kids race, the Iron Kids race. And so it's just been really neat to have her part of of this athletic journey that our family is going on. My husband also started doing triathlons. And,
wow.
So it's like you have an athletic family. And I mean, my family growing up was very athletic, but I was always the one who wasn't athletic. But
right.
I really appreciate the fact that, you know, we can, you know, go on trips together. We can do things together. I mean, we ride together in Central Park. And I think as a family, it's really important to be able to have something that we can do physically together. So it's been really fun. But being able to be a role model for other women in triathlon is also important to me. I think, you know, when I started the sport, you know, it's obviously changed over the past 10 years. But you want to see people who look like you in the sport.
Yes, and, you do. Yep.
And I'm always inspired when I see different people achieving their athletic dreams. And if I can be a person that can inspire someone to take on that goal of, you know, doing their first triathlon or stepping up the distance to do their first Ironman or whatever the case may be, like, it makes me feel good, but then also acknowledging all the other people that have been an inspiration to me.
Love it. Now, do you have any triathlons coming up for yourself?
Yes, I signed up for Eagle Man. So I'm focusing on 70.3 this year.
Oh, nice. Oh, 70.3 is plenty. That's a long way. But it's funny how people say, only. You know, oh, it's 70.3 miles. What are people talking about? My longest events are basically, you know, a sprint. I like the sprint because it's done. I could be in the beer garden by 9 in the morning. Then I'm a happy person, right?
I, you know what? Good for you. I think the sprint events is like kill my heart because I think it's so stressful, so fast. I like the endurance side, but yeah, I think it's funny how people say that. Like, I've completed 4 Ironmans and one day I'm going to go back to the Ironman distance, but right now I just want to focus on managing my personal schedule and staying fit. Like, it's fun to race and to just do it for me.
Well, there's a fun race coming up, July 8th. Actually, I've been a big proponent of these pool triathlons to get new people into our sport because the swim scares the crap out of people. And Steve Del Monte, who's a race director back east, is putting on a women's only pool triathlon in Philly coming up on July 8th. And he already has over 1,000 women signed up. How cool
That's
is that?
Incredible.
Yeah, it's like a 400 wow. swim in the pool and a 12-mile bike and a 5K run.
Yeah, I think that's great. And one of my first triathlons was a pool triathlon, too.
See?
It's kind of funny. Like, they, you know, you're seated to, like, you know, swim laps in the pool, but it was like a 8-figure-8, you know? Like,
right.
You swim, whatever. But it's a good way to get people involved, and there's a big difference. At least for me, swimming in a pool versus like open water.
Right. It's sort of, we call it sort of the gateway drug. You gotta feel like you're part of the triathlon family, right? And then you can move on to bigger and longer events. But for the beginning, why not do something that's in a little more controlled environment and you're not swimming in, you know, you're not swimming in the Hudson, you're not swimming in the Schuylkill River or the Potomac. You're able to swim in a pool where you know that, hey, there's not a lot of critters in here. I think you'll be okay.
That's really neat. I'm going to have to check it out.
It'd be fun. We should get you there. I think you'd enjoy it. That'd be a lot of fun. Now, in terms of your connection with CAF, we got you your racing chair?
Yep.
Very
and you've supported me in a few of my Kona trips.
Oh, perfect. Cool.
Yes.
Hey, Minda, congratulations on everything you've accomplished. I love the fact that, as Chrissy said, you have a platform and you can change perceptions and you can get people, especially women, to understand that this sport is for them because we want everybody to understand how wonderful the sport is. Now, hey, in terms of your parents, have they jumped into any of this stuff? The parents in Washington?
Yeah. Well, they are the best spectators. They show up to all of our events. My sister was inspired to do a half Ironman, and my brother-in-law started triathlon. we're still trying to get my other two brothers in it, but and my sister-in-law completed it, half Ironman. So I guess I kind of have an effect on the family.
But you are.
My parents, they've attended each one of our races, so it's awesome.
Well, and there's an art to being a spectator. You've got to know where to be, when to be, all that type of stuff to maximize.
It's
You don't want to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
It's work. I mean, we spectated for my sisters, and it was actually a lot of fun. So I appreciate it. And, like, when you're on the course, it's really nice to have people cheering for you. It really gives you that boost.
Minda, you are the absolute best. Thank you so much for taking so much time. And if people want to watch your TED Talk, where can they go to watch that?
Yeah. So it's on, there's a special link. It's go.ted.com and then my / my name. But you can also find me on Twitter. I posted on my Twitter account. It's at Minda Dentler. And it's also on the TED.com website. It's on the front page still. It just was released on Monday. So I would love for people to check it out and give me a shout and let me know what you think about it.
I think the last time I saw it, was it close to 200,000 views?
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Awesome. Yay.
I love it. Minda Dentler, the only woman to finish the Ironman Triathlon World Championship using a hand cycle and racing chair under all of the cutoff times. And that time, I don't think we ever said that your time was 14:39:10. That's very impressive. The cutoff time, 17 hours, and you killed it. 14:39:10, I love that. Minda, thank you as always for taking time to chat.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Minda Dentler has been our guest. Definitely check out her TED Talk. It was amazing. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon. That's toughmantri.com. VeloFix, world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, chase your destiny. Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series. Swim Run USA, epic races and epic places. That's USA-swimrun.com. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation. Last year, we sent out 2,448 grants totaling $3.7 million to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on BabbittVille.com or on iTunes for all of our interviews. And as always, endurance lives here.